Well, okay, everybody. Hello. I'm happy to see you here, or I'm happy to see your names here. I'm happy to be here with you virtually. As has been the case now for a couple of these meetings, I am going to begin with a couple of emails that I've gotten in the last few days. So, this one begins, "Hi, John. Today I stumbled into reading some words by U.G. Krishnamurti. I'm not sure if you've read anything by or of him before, but my guess is you know some things. Anyway, his manner, however one would talk about him, struck me as severe, but struck me, and has left me feeling unsettled and with questions to taunt your unchanging message of just look at yourself and all will be fine with. UG seems again and again to harp on and reveal the hypocrisy of the spiritual seeker and some spiritual teachers, something maybe you refer to when you say, of course, it's all ego. He lashes out at meditation as an illusory strategy for the self-centered me to get some sort of advantage. He goes on, I read in I Am That, in one of Nisargadatta's conversations, he offers that one has to follow one's interests to the end to see them as bankrupt and unfulfillable. And when I read that, I felt relieved. Great. I can still do things I want to for a little while without feeling like I'm giving in to the baser parts of myself or like I'm condemning my immortal being to death. I can pursue sex or drink alcohol again, can't I? Since some part of me is not done with it. I'm being violent to myself by forbidding these urges and being fake by trying to seem more pure than I am. Enough of this bullshit. Be honest. And then I pull back and weary that I'm making excuses, that I'm allowing delays to build and build and build, postponing. And so a conflict looms inside me. And though I can read quotes and entertain how beautiful the self must be, oh, how wonderful it is that I am already, that I already am that, and how incomprehensibly profound it will be to one day realize that. I put the quote away and wander around my apartment until a distraction can steal this fraudulent me away. And I feel sick of this bullshit. And it seems irredeemably to be bullshit to me, myself that is. Even this email, it's all posturing. It's all a story that's occupying space that isn't there when attention is turned away from it. And yet, but I wonder at this then, if the self is true and the false is false, and the false is completely beside the point in the true knowing itself as true, in the true, that is, knowing itself as true, then why is there talk of the quiet mind? Then why is there talk that the quiet mind can only realize, or talk that meditation can be of help, or talk of trying to bring presence into daily life, or talk or of stopping being false and lying to oneself? To whom are all these instructions directed, and for what point? And if one technique could be useful for inquiry, then wouldn't the techniques that support that technique be useful? And on and on. Until we're right back on the merry-go-round of self-improvement and manufacturing some little image of me being on the path to realization. I feel sick and weary at it, John. And perhaps the worst part of it is, weary of it only in a very manageable way. I'll finish this email, eat my dinner, and tuck myself to sleep. Or not. Aha. John, I do want to say this isn't all right here what I just wrote that's inside me. Of course, you know that. Another part of whatever is here, I'll just say me, seems to see all this as an aspect, so what? But I wanted to give voice to these despairs or quandaries that rise up time to time in hopes that you might have something to say that might put some perspective on them so that they won't torment me the next time they arise. But they arise in inquiry and seem or feel to be an impasse that my attention and energy get caught up in.
Okay, we had a little technical adjustment that Carla came to the rescue to do, so hopefully you can hear me better now. So, regarding this email. As to the first part of the email in which he speaks about the aspect and the presentation of U.G. Krishnamurti, I actually have never read anything by or about U.G. Krishnamurti. I barely recognize the name, frankly. I have very little interest in spiritual teachers at all. I have very little interest in spiritual teachings at all, and so therefore I really don't give these things the attention that they might deserve if I had more interest in these things. I can tell you that regarding Nisargadatta, who I don't consider a spiritual teacher, by the way, regarding Nisargadatta, that all of these things that are said, whether it's said by me or by Ramana or Nisargadatta or anybody else who truly wants to be of help, all of these things that are said, their meaning, when it's wrested from the context in which it appeared, is absolutely unknowable and of no use to us, really. The offering that it's necessary to exhaust desires before they go away, well, that may or may not be true, but it is, as you suspect. I don't know if you're here or not, but it is, as you suspect, that beside the point. The desires, the relationship to them, the weariness, the anger, the kind of intense antagonism toward these continuing habitual behaviors that seem to be intractable. All of these things are part of the life. All of these things are part of the apparatus, the face of the personality that has come into being, you know not why, and I know not why, and that has taken upon itself the shapes and behaviors and habits and relationships that it has with no intent whatsoever and with no understanding whatsoever and with no motivation whatsoever. The person itself, the shape of the personality, its face, its aspects, its characteristics and so forth are entirely formed by the context in which it appears, by the forces that impinge on it from all sides, internally, externally, from the right, from the left, from the top, from the bottom, the opinions of others, the relationships with others, the deep driving need to be free of the fearfulness and anxiety that seem to characterize a life, the efforts to become something, the efforts to be something else, the efforts to make this go away and this stay, the things that are said to us by what seem to be others, our place in the world, our place in society, the context in which we appear, is entirely the engine and the apparatus whereby our own shape, the shape of our person, the shape of our personality, the shape of our mind, our life, is formed. It's not formed as a result of wanting this or not wanting that. The wanting this and the not wanting that itself has come into being entirely by the dictates of the context in which it appears, driven always by the only authentic energy of desire that there is, which is to be free of all belief about what I am, to be settled once and for all upon the reality of what I am, to be as I am. the rest of it is all conditional, and it's okay to try to do something about it. Maybe some of the things we do are helpful, maybe not. All of the actions that are taken themselves, whether they are helpful or not helpful, are themselves brought into being by the conditions in which they appear. So the thing about sex, about pursuing sex, drinking alcohol, forbidding these urges, being fake, trying to become more pure, trying to be honest, trying to be weary, trying to be done with weary, trying to be done with delays and postponement and so forth, all of these things are, as the writer has said, beside the point. But not beside the point to the life. I mean, they are the very fabric and stuff of the life itself. They are the meat of the life itself. They are not beside the point in the life, but they are beside the point in the pursuit of the actual solution to the underlying sense that life is suffering. They are beside the point to the simple and radical possibility of being free of all of the deep-seated belief that this is me, this postponer, this vacillating one, this brilliant one, this stupid one, this beautiful one, this ugly one. And it's that we speak about here. We speak about the solution to that, the what can be done to be rid of this undercurrent of fearfulness and anxiety that itself arises in the context of the conviction that I am at stake in this life, and that I therefore must, at the risk of my immortal soul, I must watch very carefully what thoughts come. Watch very carefully that I am not dishonest and fooling myself and all of the things that he wrote about. These things will go in their own good time when the energy, the river of energy that drives them, is snuffed out. And on to the second part of this email, where if the self is true and the false is false, and the false is completely beside the point and the true knowing itself is true. First of all, the false, glomming onto the dichotomy of true and false as a way of understanding or identifying what it is I want and what it is that I want to get rid of, is entirely artificial, and it's just part of the way we try to figure out what's good and what's bad, what I want and what I want to get rid of. There's nothing false about the life. It's not that it's false. There's nothing about the life that's false. There's nothing about anything that can be categorized as true or false. There is a belief that drives us, that forms the big part of the context of the unfolding of the life. There is a belief which itself is not a thing at all. It's an inference. It's not even a thought. It's an inference which has formed the stage and the context in which the life unfolds. This belief that there's nothing to me but this life. That's false. But that isn't even existent. There's nothing about the life that's false. The life, it's substance, it's flesh, it's everything about it. It's nature. Its inherent underlying nature is reality. Its inherent underlying nature is the eternal clear light of awareness. So it's not false. It is the play of awareness. It is the display of awareness. It is the incomprehensibly inevitable production of a reality that itself is nothing other than the silent, clear light of awareness. So it's not a matter of choosing the true over the false. It's not a matter of saying, I want my true self and I want to get rid of my false self. It's this nonsense that leads to the whole demonization of ego, which itself is a word that has no meaning, that points to nothing at all. And it's this that leads to the spiritualization of the inexistence of ego, which brings us to these announcements that you are not here, that you don't exist, that you are fraudulent, that you are an illusion. So it's not that the false is false and the true is true. What it is, that the only thing that matters is not this endless game of trying to figure out what's true and what's false, what I can get and what I can get rid of, what I really want, what I really don't want. In the end, the solution, the spiritual solution, the only spiritual solution available to us, is the exposure of this stage, this framework of the life, to the light of truth, to the light of reality, to the light of awareness, to the light of you. In the end, the most fundamental and profound issue, the most fundamental and profound confusion in our lives is almost never addressed. Not in our spiritual lives, not in our romantic lives, not in our material lives, not in our religious lives. The most profound issue is never addressed, is never even looked at, which must be the starting point for any understanding or possibility of seeing reality in anything else. The starting point must be to settle this whole issue of what am I? Really? What am I really? Who am I really? And that issue cannot possibly be settled by any examination of the outpouring of the product of confusion and misunderstanding that is the human mind, that is your own personal mind, that is the thoughts and the desires and the history and the expectations and the improvements and the things that happen bad. So that the only thing that I have to offer any of this is the same thing that I always have to offer, which is this. In the midst of all of this confusion, in the midst of all of this needing to know why this is said and why that is said, I can't tell you why people talk of the quiet mind as a necessity for realization. Mind is inherently quiet. I mean, all we're talking about when we talk about mind is thought. It's not thought that makes noise. That's a projection that we make upon this stream of thought that really is nothing at all. Touches nothing, harms nothing, does nothing, hurts nothing, helps nothing. Nothing. So I don't know why people say that. I don't know why people say that meditation can be of help, although it can be. I don't know why people talk of trying to bring presence into daily life. Presence is present. That's what presence is. It's present. Permanently. Or of stopping being false and stopping lying to oneself. Who is it that's lying to oneself? Who is it that's false? This is the only issue that has any significance or power or interest whatsoever. Who am I, really? Who am I? What is this entity that is so confused, that is so weary, that is so tired? And the times that are spent swimming around in this sewer of desire and aversion and why is this that and why is that the other thing, that time really doesn't matter. It really doesn't. It can't hurt you. The time spent looking for some better solution, some better idea, some better path to realization, that doesn't hurt you either. Doesn't help you. Doesn't hurt you. The only time that counts are those moments when you are directly exposed to this underlying sense of self, this underlying sense of me. Because in the exposure to that underlying sense of self, called by many names, self, Atman, I am, but you know what it is. It's you. It's you. And the more time spent undistracted, only the moments spent away from the distractions, withdrawn from the distractions, with attention resting in the sense of self, it's only those moments that have any consequence whatsoever in anything. Only those moments. And the consequence they have is to eliminate this underlying certainty that I am at stake in this life, that I have to pay close attention to all of this stuff, lest I do wrong, become a sinner, and find that I cannot attain the realization that I set out to attain when I set out on the spiritual path to begin with. There's nothing to do but this. Truly, there's nothing to do but this. Any time it occurs to you to do so, and when these fires of confusion and anxiety and these fires of insanity are raging, so too is very present and very raging and very palpable in its locatability. So too is this sense of self, the sense of me, the sense of somebody here who is affected by this. So that in those moments, above all time, above all others, stop for just 1 second long enough to bring your attention looking for this sense of self, the sense of being here, the sense of me. And those momentary exposures to that will do all the work. Now, it will not, so far as I know, it will not have any immediate effect on anything going on in your mind. These things have their own momentum, their habits, predispositions, vasanas, call them what you will. They are formed by the context in which they appear. And the context in which they appear is what's being changed by the gradual elimination of this underlying conviction that there's nothing to you but this life. And as that context changes, the shape of the life will change too, but not in any directly trackable way that's linked to the actual practice of the vichara, the seeking after the sense of self. But this is all you can do. And I tell you from my experience, and many have told me from their own experience, that this is all that needs to be done, and that nothing else works. That's the main thing about it. Nothing else works. The despairs and quandaries, they come and go. The confusion, it comes and goes. You are ever present, ever accessible to yourself, ever available to be touched with your attention, to be tasted just for a second with your attention. It's interesting to me. Sometimes it seems like what we want is simple a practice as this, that what we want is to be convinced by force of reason and understanding and spiritual insight. We need to be convinced that it will work. Well, the only thing I can say that speaks to that need to be convinced that it will work is this. Nothing else has. This costs you nothing. This doesn't require you to give up anything. It doesn't require you to take on any new belief. It doesn't require you to do a thing except in this moment stop for 1 second and see if you cannot with the sense of attention, see if you cannot taste, touch directly the sense of self, the sense of me, the sense of being here. And if it is as I say, then you can expect that the time will come. If you do this whenever it occurs to you to do so, you can expect that the time will come when it will do itself, when you will find it happening again and again without the needing of your conscious decision to do so. And if it's true what I say, then over time, God knows how long a time, over time, this current of fearfulness and anxiety that underlies every human consciousness, this undercurrent of anxiety and fearfulness that rises from the conviction that we are at stake in these lives, will vanish, will be snuffed out. It'll happen before you know it happens, literally. It will take some time for you to realize that it has happened. The outcome of this practice is not a new state. It's not a new state of transcendence and clarity. It's not anything new at all. It is what has always been the case. What has always been the case. You are here always. You have never moved. You have never been hurt or helped by anything. You are here. The rest of it is truly beside the point. Here's another one, another email. When you say seeing, my mind immediately looks at and tries to figure out what seeing means. Ah, my figuring mind. Is experiencing a substitute? Also, I am seriously drug dependent on opiates for pain from being struck by a car at 60 miles an hour. And I wonder if this will prevent the kind of naked seeing you refer to. I ask because my attempts to look in the AM before meds usually are of no apparent use. Conversely, the only times I seem to see myself are when I am under the influence, leading me to feel that I am merely, well, under the influence. I worry that my practice efforts, like my meds, are only a way to feel good. Can you address the impact of drugs and the like on the practice? The fact that the mind, when it hears the instruction to see, immediately tries to figure out what's meant by that and shuffles through its deck of library cards trying to find the correct reference that will enlighten it as to what is meant by seeing, that cannot interfere with the inquiry, with the vichara. Neither can drugs interfere with the vichara. It sounds to me when I read this as if, and most pernicious and consistent misunderstanding. And it's not that the misunderstanding itself even will prevent the work of the vichara. Nothing prevents it once it's begun. But the misunderstanding, as the previous writer indicate, produces a discomfort and a distress that if the misunderstanding can somehow be cleared up, it might just kind of make it easier on you. Although easier hard is really beside the point. The vichara doesn't care. The vichara does its work no matter what craziness is going on in the mind. And I tell you that from from deep personal experience that the insanity of the mind during the vichara can have no effect on it. Neither can drugs. But what it sounds like, you see, is that this person says, I wonder if this will prevent the kind of naked seeing you refer to. Well, that question can only arise from an idea about what naked seeing feels like. And this is very important, because the idea that we know what it feels like to see oneself, that we know what it feels like to be exposed to the light of reality, this idea produces a willingness to be apart from what's happening, to be an observer, judging and determining whether it's being done correctly or not, based on some concept of what it should feel like. The whole point of the vichara is the recognition that we don't have a clue what it feels like to be, that we are busy spending our lives desperately trying to escape from the very naked feeling of being that is the only thing that can possibly reveal to us the reality of our nature. And so that the whole premise of the vichara is based on the fact that we don't know how to do it, that we don't know what we're looking for, and that the only thing we have to bring to bear in this matter is the encouragement of those who seem to know what they're talking about, and the native inherent intelligence and discernment and common sense that resides within human consciousness, no matter how crazy that mind might have become. So, and it doesn't matter whether you're feeling good or you're feeling bad. That doesn't matter either. It really doesn't matter what your motive is. Even if your motive is to do the vichara in order that you can feel good, that doesn't matter. It's the doing of the vichara that matters. It is a determined and earnest effort to have the direct, unmediated experience of the sense of self, not of anything else, not of just that, the sense of self, which, short of God, is never absent. Short of God is accessible to you. Drugs won't get in the way. Ignorance won't get in the way. Confusion won't get in the way. You just begin, and everything else will be taken care of. Okay, here's another one. Hi, John. I have a couple of questions, and I find the emailing easier to articulate because of the language, I suppose. I hear so often you saying, see the reality of what you are. It is the looking that does the work. Could you articulate a little further on that? Because my inquiry seems to continue, but with other forms and questions rather than what am I or am I here? It seems to me that something takes me to spontaneously watch the void, so to speak. The attention is sort of taken by a spaciousness or a vastness where I become a kind of object. The subject of life gets irrelevant. Even though my life is totally unaltered by this, I am subject to the usual idiosyncrasies and forces and conditionings, as has always been the case. Well, the fact that the life is subject to the usual idiosyncrasies and forces and conditionings and vasanas and predispositions and so forth is to be expected, although over time that'll change, as it has changed over time from the very beginning of the life. Watching the void is a little strange to me. It sounds a little like spacing out. The whole, you see, here's the thing. what you're looking for is not the void. What you're looking for is not spaciousness. What you're looking for is not peace or clarity. What you're looking for is not eternal, clear light of awareness. What you're looking for is you. You. Just you. This sense of being. This I am. This sense of self. This sense of me. There's no... It is part of the conditioning, part of the way in which the apparatus is formed in the context. Part of it is a habitual movement of attention to the distraction of bright shiny lights or baubles and beads. Part of what we do, part of the way in which these conditioned creatures act is to prefer always to move attention to moving objects, to move attention to new things, to what just appeared. I mean, it might be the answer to the secret of the universe, or it might be a grave threat. So our attention naturally is distracted by these new arisings, new states, new experiences and so forth, and also the endless chewing over and checking on, rattling the doors of all the other aspects of the personality that are in play. These are distractions. They're not anything that is a problem. They don't stand between you and the sense of self. Nothing stands between you and the sense of self. You are the sense of self, you see. So these distractions, they can be seen in context, and they can be seen for what they are, as distractions only. There's nothing you can do about that. I mean, really, by the time you're distracted and notice it, you're already distracted. There's no need to do anything about any of that, the void or any of that. No need to do anything about it. Just in the moments when that is not occurring, in the moments when when distraction is not pulling you into the realm of thought and desire and states and transcendence and so forth, in those moments, that's when it occurs to you to do this radical turning, this radical pivot from the outward world, which includes all that you think yourself to be, inward, to the sense of self, which you are. So, when attention touches the sense of self, in that moment, there is no confusion about whether you're in the right place or not. The confusion about whether you're in the right place or not results from the kind of automatic conditioned movement of attention to the thoughts and storyline that has begun to run about what you have just done, which is to touch the sense of self. But you see, none of that's going to hurt you. None of it has hurt you in the past. The sense of self remains the same. None of it is going to help you. Sure to God, nothing in that realm of thought and relationship and all of that has ever helped you in the past. All you have to do is continue the vichara. Continue in the moments when the distractions is not gripping you, or I should say in the moment when attention is not flitting about in the distractions of thought. In those moments, just in those moments, just for a second, bring your attention looking for the sense of me. What's it feel like to be me? Where's that located? What's its nature? Can I see it? Can I taste it? Can I feel it? Can I experience it? And then he goes on, by chance I stumbled upon some Advaita teachers who seemed very extreme in their pointing, i.e. somebody said, nobody's home. There never has been a you, ever. Nothing, never, ever happened. Or, there is only thinking, living, breathing, heart beating, for none. It's just happening. Only the separation that once arised is responsible for the sensation that there is a you that possesses all these things. Please, John, would you comment? So what? I mean, we have spent 10,000 years in this creature that is humanity trying to figure out these metaphysical and philosophical matters. So what? Who cares? How are these questions of any use to you? How do they bring you one nanometer closer to an end to the conviction that you are at stake in this life? How does understanding or not understanding the spiritual assertion that you are inexistent help you in any way in bringing an end to the river of fearfulness and anxiety that underlie the life that arise from the conviction that you're at stake here, and you better know whether you exist or do not exist, you better know whether you exist or do not exist, because otherwise you're going to, I don't know what's going to happen to you. This is it. There is nothing else to do. Bring your attention to the sense of self. The whole business about, I don't know why people say these things. I can't imagine why people say these things. And this whole business is nothing other apart from a commentary, an attempt to say something intelligible about the very sense of self that can be tasted directly. It's an attempt to say something intelligible about what needs nothing said about it. All that's needed ever is to taste this, is whenever it occurs to you, whenever you can. Don't worry about all the rest of the times, or do worry about all the rest of the times. But worry or not worry, whenever it occurs to you to do so, see if you cannot feel what it feels like to be. Feel what it feels like to be here, to be you. Feel what self feels like. Okay, I think that's enough emails for today. I'm really grateful when you guys write to me, and I've found, and people have reported to me also, that it's very useful to be able to send an email and have me speak about it here in these online meetings. And it seems like a good thing. It seems like an opportunity for you to be able to actually write out and articulate exactly what it is you want to, that seems to be causing you difficulty, so that we can talk about it in public here. It's also extremely valuable, and in one way even more valuable, when you talk to me face to face here in this room, and when we have a spontaneous conversation here in this room. So it's time for that part of it now. I have nothing more to say except what I have already said. I swear to you, I give you my word above everything. I give you my word that if you will try this, if you will just try this simple, radical idea that is contained in the Vichara, this simple, radical idea of just for this moment, not concerning yourself with any of the craziness of your mind, but concerning yourself only with the possibility of bringing your attention directly toward and into and on the sense of self, the sense of you. The questions that you ask to bring this about don't matter. What am I? Here am I? Am I here? All of that's okay. But those are only, they have no purpose other than to, if they work, they have no purpose other than to bring your attention to the sense of self. and anything that will bring your attention to the sense of self will finally, in the end, bring an end to this this feeling of being at stake here, this feeling that life sucks, and in the end will bring you to the realization that this life is what you have always wanted, that this life, just as it is the self realized, the self having taken form in the world. This life, just as it is. And there's no way in God's earth that that realization can come to you apart from the direct, immediate, continuous, conscious experience of the reality of what you are, which is always here, and which is precisely this sense of self. So, if you want to... If you want to talk to me, I guess what you do is you request voice, and Carla will turn your microphone on, and we'll talk away, okay?
Travis calling from San Francisco.
Hi, Travis.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm very well, and you?
I'm doing very, very well. And very happy to be able to hear you again today.
Likewise. So what can I do for you?
I wanted to check in about sort of my own self-inquiry and how things have been going. And I wanted to thank you again for the attention you gave me about my mother's passing the last time we talked.
Okay.
So what happened for me recently is part of my own self-inquiry practice is to, in my morning meditation, to really take that as a conscious time to look at myself, not sort of to the exclusion of anything else, but just really focus, and then throughout the day, as you say, whenever it occurs to me, to just take a look at what it feels like to be, regardless of the circumstances. And I was meditating, and I realized what I had done was mentally sort of, I was looking at it. The thing that I was looking for when I was looking for the sense of being was something it that I was, you know, looking at. And that seemed to suddenly not make sense to me, that if I'm looking at it, then it's not just the raw experience of being myself. And sort of this shift sort of took place where, rather than being something I could regard, it kind of moved, or it didn't move, but my realization was that it was right where I was sitting, as it were. I mean, it's hard to use words about all this stuff, but so this focusing in and this target of the self-inquiry became not something separate from my own experience, but just the I don't know, underpinnings, the ground of whatever, blah, blah, blah. But later on that day, I'm a voracious reader, and it just so happens that right now I'm reading, again, Talks by Ramana Maharshi. And I was at my desk at work, just doing my day, and out of the corner of my eye, I caught the smiling face of Ramana, which is very pleasant. And I look back at my monitor, and the only way I can explain it is just this... the only word I came up with was this feeling of just sort of dropping. And I remember thinking, what the hell is this? And then almost immediately I realized that this was not something new. This was not something unusual. This is just me being at my desk, going about my day. And I guess it was a deepening of my understanding of where the target of self-inquiry is, and that there's nothing new gained by it, but just that it's become much more available or obvious to me where I'm looking when I'm consciously self-inquiring. Not that anything new springs up when I self-inquire or anything new is brought to attention, but just that, you know, often it happens unconsciously. I mean, I guess it's always happening, right, that we're self-inquiring because it's all that is really here is the sense of being here. But when I look at it, like, consciously, when I take this moment consciously, the mystery of where to look is kind of gone, which is very nice. And I was trying to explain this later the day to my wife, and the best words I could come up with was, what I am is this. And I guess I just wanted to bounce that off to you and see if it sounds like I'm on the right track.
Very much on the right track. And one of the interesting things about this, and the thing that can be, I mean, you know, I spend all my time trying to tell people where to look, and I know when I, as soon as I open my mouth, that I will fail, and the best I can do is somehow to trigger the desire to find this that I am calling the sense of self, or the I am, or what, by whatever name, as you say, blah blah blah, we assign to it. But because I know from my own experience that if I can just get it started in whoever it is that I am speaking with, if I can just get it started, that innate intelligence and discernment and capacity to have insight will guide that mind correctly until it sees what you have seen. And that sounds to me wonderfully expressive of what it is that I am talking about. So it seems to me that you are absolutely on the right track, and it's probably too late for you to get off the right track now. And the thing that's useful is to see how it is, this is what I'm talking about when I say that no one can tell you where you are. No one can tell you really where to look. No one can tell you really how to do this. The best that I can do is somehow play a role in triggering this activity to begin, and once it begins, it'll teach itself. So I'm very happy to hear this, Travis. Okay? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, John, it does. And the idea of being able to not do, well, it's like saying that somehow I would be able to stop being just being, right? Like spontaneously stop existing, right? Like, as long as I am, then self-inquiry is there. I think it's far too late for me if I wanted to not do that. And I was just puzzling the other day. I don't know, when I talk with other friends and I ask what I'm doing, and sometimes the subject of this self-inquiry comes up, and I mention you, and I don't know what to call you. I know you don't like being called a spiritual teacher, and I think your reasons make total sense and all that. But I did come up with something, and I just want to bounce this off of you, that you are my self-inquiry coach.
Well, I can live with that. And, you know, the other thing that's really interesting about what you said is that well, I don't remember what it was. It struck me so interesting because I was so delighted with being a self-inquiry coach. Although, you know, anything that we say about these things is just words. And it's like, although when you describe your experience and what has transpired and how this has unfolded in you is a part of the vichara, and that's, by the way, one of the reasons that I don't say self-inquiry anymore is because I am disenchanted with the uselessness of the word inquiry to actually communicate what it was that Ramana was trying to get us to do, because it's not really questioning or looking for answers or anything. The thing that you said that I really am very happy with is it is absolutely the case that it is impossible for you to stop the vichara as it is impossible for you to stop being. The vichara is what you are. The vichara is the natural state, and it is, as you also see, always present. There is never a moment in life when the vichara is not underlying the whole show. It is only I think it's just the luck of the draw that we have come into these lives with the unavoidable inference that there's nothing to us but these lives. But it's all the vichara, all of our efforts to be good, all of our efforts to get what we want, all of our efforts to be what we should be, all of our efforts to think the right thoughts, have the right desires, keep the right things, get rid of the wrong things. All of these things are the inept application of the energy of the vichara. The whole of the universe is the vichara. So I'm happy to hear that too. Do you follow that?
Yeah, John, I do. I guess my take on that would be like, I mean, if I were to write down what I am, right, it might be the letter I with a question mark afterwards. You know, it's just always open-ended capacity for experience and sort of questioning of what's going on. And I think our natural state or whatever, we're this open-ended thing, this open-ended question that's here to play about and to experience life. Not to say that, not to make life be unimportant, but that it's this open-ended thing. It's this, and I think there's an inherent part of our minds that are meant and built to sort of make things closed, ended. So to grab at understanding for whatever reason, maybe it's a survival impulse, maybe it's fear, I don't know, but it's this this natural tendency to close off the question, to follow I with something else. I am whatever, I am fat, I am rich, I am happy, I am successful, I am, you know, in San Francisco, whatever. But we have this natural tendency to close off this question, whereas the first state of any answer is I, and then we follow with these answers in a desperate attempt, and I don't know why, like you say, we do this, but this attempt to close off and to contain and make graspable life rather than being open to grabbing whatever comes our way and enjoying it while it's here and not missing it while it's gone.
Yes, I think that's exactly the case. There is a deep conditioned determination to answer questions, to bring an end to it, and all of that. And it seems to be that need to close things off, to settle things once and for all, that need is directly linked to this undercurrent of fearfulness and anxiety that arises from the fear that we are trapped in this life, that this is what there is to us. And it is that produces this sense of urgency to figure things out. And I agree with you entirely. I always is followed by am, and am is always followed by something. And the possibility is it's not so much I question mark, it's more just question mark. And that's about as much as I can say. Okay?
That's awesome, John. Yeah, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Anybody else want to speak to me?
Steve, calling from the UK.
Hi, Steve.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yes. Yes, I can.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks again for your assistance with this message you put up.
Steve, wait a minute. Steve, you're breaking up really badly. I don't know whether that is because of your connection, but for some reason, you're breaking up too badly for me to understand what you're saying.
Okay, I suspect it's here then. I'll try again next week.
Yeah, I can't understand what you're saying. Perhaps you could write to me after this meeting, and either we can meet together, or I can write back to you, or I can speak about it at the next meeting, or however you want to handle it. But whatever it is, the connection is too bad to be for me to even have a clue what you're saying. Okay.
Okay, John. Thanks for trying. Bye.
Bye. I hope to hear from you. I'm very sorry that we couldn't do this. Anybody else?
Carolyn, calling from St. George.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, John.
What can I do for you?
First of all, I wanted to thank you for the 5-day intensive, which was so helpful. And something has come up since, and I have a question that I wanted to run by you.
Okay.
And my question is, what role do experiences and understanding play in the self-seeking? And I ask this because of a recent experience that I had that seemed very minor, but it seemed to have some important ramifications, and I wanted to get your advice on this.
Okay.
Recently, when I was doing the self-seeking meditation, all I could feel was the tension and contraction of what I experience a lot of the time, which feels like an energy block. And when I've really looked at it, I could see that it's just a knot of fear, resistance, and denial, along with all the things that I have feared, resisted, and denied. And I always know that the stillness and peace are underneath, because that's what shows up as the part of me that is always there, that doesn't change, and that I find when I feel like I have really connected with who I am. So after what seemed like an eternity, I finally fell into that space of deep stillness and peace. But what was there also along with it, which I found very surprising, was the energy block. And everything that the energy block contained, and it all coexisted with the stillness and the peace of the awareness of I. And I understood that the energy block was just part of the drama of Carolyn, and I was able to just let it be and allow it to be permeated by the stillness and peace. And I know this is just another experience, which we have talked about, and I have been convinced that experience is not where it's at. But I still want to know what role this plays in the self-seeking.
Well, this is very interesting, Carolyn. I'm not sure that that this has something to do with the... Well, first of all, let me answer the first question that you posed, which is what role does understanding play in the vichara? Very little. The only role that understanding has here is to begin the vichara. In other words, if I can articulate the potential and the possibility that is inherent in seeking exposure to the reality of what you are, then that understanding itself might be helpful in freeing attention just for a moment in order to bring it inward. The understanding of the role of experiences of spaciousness and peace and so forth, those understandings are just distractions, and they really are of little use at all in any sense. What I want to, however, really focus on here is your description of what you found, this energy block, which feels like a knot, which feels like the, how did you put it, like the concentration of all the neediness and self-centeredness and all of that, that constitute the bad parts of this, well, this life. And the interesting thing about this is that is precisely the doorway. It is that knot that is precisely the target of the vichara. And the understanding that arises that says, this is the problem about which something should be done or not done. This is not me. This is something else. This is a part of Carolyn and a part of... Well, actually, it is the core of Carolyn. It is the very center of Carolyn, this knot. And in Sanskrit, there is even a word for that in the literature that has sought over the ages to speak intelligibly about the relationship between reality and unreality and so forth, and the channels and the this and that. There's even a word for that which escapes me now, but the word means the knot, strangely or interestingly. That knot is precisely what Ramana tells us to grab by the throat, to hold attention there at all cost, to keep this attention as much as possible resting on that knot. It is that knot that actually is the doorway, that actually is the sense of self, that actually is that. And the opinions about what constitute that knot, that it's an energy block, that it is all the concentration of the bad things, the resistances and the neediness and the desire and all that stuff, that's just the distraction of the mind's chattering about things. The appearance of the experience of spaciousness and peace and so forth, that is a ameliorating conditioned arising that serves to find some other place for attention to rest rather than on this which is itself the very center of the vichara, the very target of the vichara. So what I would ask you to do is to find that knot again, to keep looking at that knot, to keep your attention resting there. That's exactly what I found in the beginning of my own experience with this practice, exactly what I found in my attempts to find this thing that was called ego, exactly what I found was precisely what you described as this knot. And it was for me exactly the willingness to ignore all of my understanding in favor of Ramana's simple statement to grab ego by the throat, to not let it go, to keep your attention there on that knot, which he also calls a knot. It was my willingness to ignore all the rest of it, and just as I could, and whenever I could, moved my attention back to that experience of energy blockage and all the rest of it. Do you hear that?
Yes, and that brings up another question. And this is what I was doing. I was really focusing on the knot when I fell into the stillness and peace. And once I fell into it, it seemed like that I was just fine with the energy block and also with the fear, the resistance, the denial, and all of the other things that I had feared, resisted, and denied. It was just all there, and I was fine with it.
Well, then that just confirms what Ramana said. And to fall through the knot into that is different than having an experience appear that in which the knot was welcome. And it's just a matter of expression and language. But you then prove the point. Is the knot there now? Does it remain? It probably will for some time, does it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's there all the time.
And the only thing to be alert to is the possibility of objectifying that which you fell into through this knot, and seeking that as the answer to the problem, because the truth is, as you saw in that moment, there is no problem. There's no problem with any of it. So you have by the means that I have suggested, which is your own natural intelligence and discernment, you have found exactly the right target for your attention. Whenever you can, put your attention there, just there. And sometimes the result will be the reward of falling through it into the actuality, because what you're describing is the actuality of your nature, which really has no agenda whatsoever in this existence, in this cosmos. And sometimes that will reveal itself and manifest, and other times it'll just stay a knot. But your job is just to keep your attention there as often as you can, for as long as it takes, okay?
Yes, thank you very much, and thanks for the encouragement, and I will just continue doing that.
Excellent. Thank you, Carolyn. Thank you for that report, because it's very important. And you know, and it's not that the experience that attends the vichara is the same for all, but that experience of finding this knot of neediness and claustrophobia and worthlessness and wanting and not getting and all of that and energy blockage, that experience is common enough that I have heard it first from Ramana and confirmed it in my own experience, and have since heard this same or similar reports from many people. So thank you so much, Carolyn, for that report. Is there anybody else? Okay, I have a note that Carly gave me from Carl in Munich, who doesn't have a mic, and who asked this question. Why does no Advaita teacher or satsang teacher ever give any meditation techniques? What should I do or practice between satsangs? Is that not important? Carl, what I say you should do, or, you know, what you can do, the only thing you can do during satsang, after satsang, before satsang, any time that it occurs to you to do so without any need to apply any structure to it, although applying to a structure to it is okay and in some cases can be helpful, is just this. Move your attention away from the thoughts. Don't worry about stopping the thoughts. Just move your attention away from the thoughts and the sensations and so forth, and see if you cannot find within you, whatever within you means to you, see if you cannot find the sense of self, this sense of being here, this sense of you. See if you cannot find you, about which all the stories and commentaries and practices and techniques and desires and realizations and unrealizations and so forth are about. Just that. Just whenever it occurs to you to do so, you don't need to do it on the cushion, although you can do it on the cushion. You don't need to do it at any particular time, although you can do it at a particular time. You can do it when you're in the checkout line at the store. You can do it while you're walking on the street. You can do it while you're cooking dinner. You can do it while you're watching TV, for that matter. Just for one second, stop for just a second and see if you cannot find with your attention the taste of you, the sense of you, the sense of being. And this is not something that can, the effects of which can be tracked by paying attention to what's happening in your mind or your life or your spiritual self or anything. This is something that will, over time, take away from you, snuff out within you, the underlying conviction that your identity is this life, that your identity is this mind, this person, this body, that your identity is limited here. And as that sense disappears gradually over time, the fearfulness and anxiety that drive the life from within to be the right thing or the good thing or the smart thing or the true thing or any of that, that energy will be snuffed out. And you will discover that this life is what you have always wanted. Now, as far as meditation techniques, and obviously this is not a meditation technique except that it is the final meditation. It's not a technique because it's not something that I can tell you exactly how to do. I can tell you to look at yourself, that's all. As far as other meditation techniques that may or may not be useful in this adventure, there are many of them. There's mindfulness meditation. The simplest is the mindfulness meditation of the Buddhist, which is very simple. And just involves watching the breath and bringing attention back to the breath. That can be helpful to you. It can be calming of the mind and provide some insights within the mind that make the vichara itself less fraught with confusion. But none of that's necessary. No meditation is necessary. We are always meditating. We're always meditating on one thing or another. Just whenever you can, whenever it's possible for you to do so, let that meditation be the resting of attention directly on the feeling of being, on the sense of self, on you. I hope that's of help to you. Steve, I'm not sure what you're asking here. What I have from Carla is, could I, inquiring, reinforce the sense of a person who is separate, i.e. who is part of this life? The sense of the person who is separate actually must be very present in order for the vichara to have a target. The target of the vichara is precisely the sense of a person here. That's exactly what the target of the vichara is. So, can it reinforce it? I'm suspecting that what you mean here is that there's some contradiction between a person inquiring and the desire to be rid of the sense of a person. And if that's the case, I tell you that the purpose of the vichara is not to rid yourself of the sense of a person being here. The purpose of the vichara is to rid yourself, to snuff out. It's not the person that's the problem, you see. It's not the belief in the person that's the problem. It's not the person is inexistent or the person is unreal or the person is an illusion that is the solution. The person has nothing to do with it. The person is beside the point. The purpose of the vichara is to snuff out the belief that there's nothing to you but this person. To snuff out the belief that there's nothing to you but this life. That's all. And in snuffing out that belief, the undercurrent of fearfulness and anxiety that is not the cause of, but the actuality of, the suffering of human existence, that fearfulness and anxiety also is snuffed out. I hope that's helpful. Anybody else?
Catherine calling from New Zealand.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, John.
I can hear you perfectly. What can I do for you?
It's unusual for me to feel as grateful as I do today for your capacity to, I've been sick again with bronchitis, and it seems at those times that my mind really does go quite mad and I can't do self-inquiry very well at all. That's how it seems to me. And just listening to you today, it's kind of, you just point so well to the craziness of the mind, but you don't make the mind the enemy. I just find that so incredibly helpful because, you know, I've been sort of having that sense of boredom and failing at it. What's the point? And I'm not getting anywhere. And, you know, of course it's just the mind, but it tends, especially when I'm sick for some reason, to really kind of get a hold. And, I just so grateful for your teaching because it doesn't set things up into good and bad, and it just keeps shining a light on everything. So it's just to say thank you, John.
Well, you're very, very welcome, Catherine. I'm happy to hear that that you find this to be useful. And I promise you, if you just continue what you're doing, everything will turn out right. Now, of course, it's not pleasant to be sick, and I think you should probably go to bed, drink lots of fluids, and good nourishment, and get better. But I'm honored to be useful to you in this way, Catherine.
Just one question, John. When I keep looking at attention and what attention is, I keep having that sense that attention is actually me. Am I confused there?
No, not at all. It's all you. There's nothing that you can find anywhere that is not you. When you see that attention also is you, then see if you can find the center of attention. Now that's a funny turn of phrase, which isn't exactly how I meant it. See if you can find the source of attention. If you see that that's the case, then turn your attention on itself. Okay.
Would you say a bit more about? You just said something about that I'm everything or something. I just don't get that. What do you mean?
Well, it doesn't matter, and I'm not, you know, it's a, I am ashamed to say that it's a metaphysical claim, and I don't want you to take it too seriously. I will say it again, if you look carefully, you will see that you can't find anything anywhere that's not you, that is not actually the nature of which is not actually you. But that's, well, to coin a phrase, beside the point. If you if you set out to try to see what it is that I am saying in that, then you will be off in the forest of distraction, which is okay so long as from time to time you rest your attention from the forest of distraction and bring it back to the sense of self or to the source of attention itself. But don't concern yourself too much about that, okay?
Yeah, no, you're right, because it's one of those things that there's such a longing to know what you mean, but really it just gets that whole thing going again of, you know, of not being able to do it or whatever. So I just focus on the best I can to follow what you say. Thanks so much, John.
You're very welcome. Yeah, that is the shortcoming of these metaphysical statements and why I don't have much to say about it. And what you will discover is that everything that every time I slip and make some claim like that, what you will discover in the end is that it has always been the case. It has always been the case. There's nothing new in any of the things that I say, even when I misspeak myself by speaking metaphysically. So please do continue with what you're doing and stay in touch with me and get well, okay?
Thanks, John.
Anybody else?
Adrian calling from Ottawa, Canada.
Hi, Adrian. Adrian, do you not have the capacity to speak, or is it a technical issue we have here? Well, of course, if it is, you can't answer me, right? So, see what you can do. But let me know, and we can talk if you can talk. Anybody else?
John, calling from New Zealand.
Hi, John.
Hi there, John and Carla. Can you hear me well?
I can hear you perfectly.
Thank you. I was talking to you last satsang about, and asked you a question about instinct, and so I've been around for not very long. I just have another funny one that's popped up with me. I go back and have removed, by looking inwards, all the different identities that I have, which many of them are constructed or contrived identities, you sort of realize, and well, I have anyway, and they're not really me or I or whoever. They're just ones that I've sort of abided by or constructed or just manufactured. So I strip them all back to in the search for I, and I get back to this 4-year-old or 3-year-old boy who was still innocent and naive before you're corrupted by all the worldliness that you have to suffer. And I keep going back as that is the person that is there is actually the I that I seek, and yet I know there's more. So I go back to, I have this thought about birth, that at birth you know nothing and you have to be fed and you're completely helpless, but there's still this I is there then at birth, obviously, which leads you to, well, leads me, sorry, to ask the question, what, before birth, sort of, what, where was that I then, or that, you see where I'm getting a little tangled up here, John, can you help me with this?
I think so. What about right now? Can you find the sense of self now? In this moment, without regard to truly fascinating excursions into this train that you've been following, which has itself some interesting revelations that arise from it, but the vichara is right now. In this moment, in any moment, no matter what you're doing, is it not true, without regard to understanding and identifying the different personas that you have taken on and discarded over the years, and or taken on and put in the closet and taken on and put in the closet or discarded or whatever over the years, without regard to that. Because the personas are, is not really the sense of identity. The persona itself is the apparatus, the life shape, the shape of the life that is formed as a result of its context, is formed as a result of, like at birth or at, or soon after birth, it is formed as a result of the internal context of hunger and need and inarticulate requirements and so forth, and the external context of a loving mother or not a loving mother, or people taking care of the infant or not taking care of the infant, and the internal context of seeing what works and what doesn't work and so forth. Well, that's a persona, and that persona develops and changes and grows and shifts and becomes this one moment and that the next moment as time goes on and as the context becomes more complicated, the internal context and the external context. So it's not, the purpose of the vichara is not to identify and reveal the falseness of the various personas that we have adopted and then discarded or put away for a while. The purpose of the vichara is merely in this moment, in any moment, even during the investigation into the personas, in any moment, to bring attention directly to the present sense of self, the raw, unmediated, unmanifest sense of self, of me, here, now. That's the vichara. That's the, that is the target of it. And it's perfectly natural, and it's, and in some regards it's even somewhat useful to engage in the kind of speculative investigation that you've described, but the vichara is now. The vichara is, what does it feel like to be me now? Not what does it look like, but what does it feel like right now? And of course, the results of this, the consequences of this action are not immediate. It's not like if I scratch an itch, the itch goes away. The consequences of this action are much more profound and seep into the reality of the life over time and eventually snuff out the underlying conviction that no matter what persona is playing here, no matter whether it's a good persona, bad persona, or a clear persona, or an unclear persona, that no matter what persona is playing here, the conviction that this is all there is to me, that's what gets snuffed out. That's what gets done away with. After that, or during that, just as always, the personas will evolve and change compliance with the context in which they appear. And there's nothing wrong with them, and there's nothing, and the thing to see is that the identification, the belief in identity, is not rested in the persona. The belief in identity is not a thing at all. It is an inference that leads us to the endless chasing after relief from the feeling that I am at stake in this life, the feeling that I don't know what to do, the feeling that I have to do something. It is that the vichara is after, the snuffing out of that, of all belief about what you are, of all preference of this persona over that persona, of the persona of the newborn infant over the persona of the full-fledged adult manipulator or whatever. So look for what it feels like to be. But not then, now. And do that as often as you can. And it is the exposure to the sense of self that does the work. Do you follow that?
Yes, I do. I think not then, but now. The sense of self, not then, but now. I think that's the key to it for me. Thank you, John. I got a lot of comfort today out of hearing that once you're on the track, once it's, you've got the self-inquiry underway, that it takes over and it becomes inevitable, that it will continue on its own. I found that very comforting to hear that once you get on the track that it's self-perpetuating. I found that really good news. So, yes, I've got to think about now and not so much about who I was or before birth. But this is the reason for that is since I've been old enough to think, basically, I've lay on tops of hills and looked at the stars and wondered about all this. And so it's something that has plagued me for a long time and I guess a particular could be a tripping stone for me. One of the great things that I have gained is an insight into myself through the self-inquiry is I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly in me, and they all seem to be in equal quantities, but at least I'm able to look at myself more honestly as an offshoot to the attempts to find out who I really am. And the moments that I do this are through the day, any time, at any space, and that's what I really love about it. It only takes a moment to redirect your thoughts away from what you were doing. No matter how busy your day is, there's time for it always. So I'm getting a lot of benefit from it, and I'd like to thank you, John, for your work, and just so pleased that you're there for us all, and I'm just so very happy that you're able to help answer our questions, and I'm very grateful too for Carla's work as well.
Yeah, well, you're very welcome, and comfort's good. Just and you're on the right track, and I tell you what I tell everybody: the vichara teaches itself. It is your own inherent, innate intelligence and discernment that will bring you face to face with this sense of self that I'm asking you to look at, and all will be well. You're certainly on the right track, and I'm happy to be of help to you. Anybody else? Adrian, the problem here is that when you send the message to Carla as a request for voice, it truncates what you write. So all that she can see is, I cannot speak, I asked quest. And that's because apparently the software, when you're sending a request for voice, truncates the comment that you can make. I think it probably would be possible for you to send her, or to email me, actually. Maybe you can find a way to send her the rest of what it is you're trying to say. But the best way would be to email me, because now we're almost out of time. If you could email me at online@riverganga.org or at johnsherman@riverganga.org, the next time we get together, I will certainly speak to you about it. And conceivably, we could, if you get your difficulties taken care of as far as the technology here, conceivably we could get together here in the meeting room for a private meeting at some time. But write to me. Write to me at online@riverganga.org and I'd really love to hear what you're trying to ask. And I guess we're pretty much out of time. I don't see anybody else waiting to speak. So this is your last chance.
Okay, Derek from Vancouver.
Hi, Derek.
Hi, John. Hi, John. How are you? You well?
I'm very well. And what can I do for you?
Yeah, I'm just listening to you speak about the momentum and stuff of, like, my experience is that no matter what I do in self-inquiry, the momentum of a storyline where somebody is like doing something against me or something like that seems to continually kind of block it or make it seem more important. And I guess before I ever heard of self-inquiry or this sort of thing, it seemed in one way kind of easier because it was always like, okay, if something has gone wrong, deal with the situation and then get on with it. But now it feels like there's this kind of repression thing going on in me whereby if something comes up, instead of dealing with it, I'll go to, okay, who is experiencing this, who feels it, and it creates this sort of tension in me where I'm not really sure what to go with. I'm kind of confused a lot of the time of, it's continuously kind of, it nearly always seems to have to be resolved anyway. I don't know if I'm making sense, but I know what you're pointing at, but it just seems like it's so easy. It's like there's always some new story to block the inquiry, you know, and it quickly covers it up. Just wondering what you have to say about that. Thanks.
Well, here's the deal. Nothing can block the inquiry. Nothing. And nothing can cover up the sense of self. Absolutely nothing. It is understandable and it's common, and it certainly was what I would have reported myself at some time, to think that, to feel as if the sense of self is being covered up by this or that or the other thing that's happening, or my relationship to how it's happening and so forth. But it's just not true. These things are all happening on the surface, and they are distractions. They are attractive phenomena, arising phenomena that are attractive, by which I mean not necessarily that they are good looking, because sometimes they're very ugly, but they are attractive in that they seem to attract our attention. Now, the vichara, the seeking after the sense of self, is not something to do instead of dealing with whatever is happening in your life. I mean, to the extent that you can deal with it, you should deal with it. The only point about the vichara in connection with the arising of phenomena that are attractive and that feel very strong, that have a very powerful feel to them, a very powerful affect to them. The only thing about it that is relevant to the vichara is the recognition that in those times when there are arising phenomena that are very attractive by virtue of the force of them and the power of them and so forth, that at that same time the sense of self is also amplified because of the very power of the experiences themselves. The sense of self becomes very amplified too, so it provides an opportunity to it highlights the target of the vichara, which is the sense of self. Now, it is quite possible also that this persona, this life that is the entity that seems to be all there is to me, it's quite possible that phenomenal arising that is the whole life that's always shifting and changing and moving and so forth is undergoing some sort of evolutionary consequence of the vichara itself. That evolutionary consequence of the vichara can take many forms, and it can take really negative feeling forms. It can seem really horrifying sometimes. But if it's simply a matter of feeling that that you can't deal with the things that arise in the person and in the life and in that, then that's easily. Of course you should deal with things. You should do whatever it is you're responsible to do, and you should deal with whatever unpleasantness may be causing you difficulty and distress in whatever way is effective for you to do so. The vichara doesn't interfere with that, and that doesn't interfere with the vichara. The vichara is momentary. It is just this moment, just this moment. The sense of self, the sense of me, the feeling I am, just that, just to touch that, just to expose yourself to that. And is that helpful? Do you follow that?
Yeah, I guess it's like, you know, to what extent, like, I see these storylines or these ideas of me coming up of, you know, being hurt or ideas that they seem somewhat hollow, but yet they seem to still carry this momentum to it. And I know that when they're followed, they just end up causing more pain for me and others, but I just can't seem to drop them so easily. Like, I do know quite clearly what you're speaking about, this background of self and, you know, what the inquiry is pointing at, and that seems so clear to me at times, but then very, very quickly these other things come in and seemingly obscure it, or I'll still continue the inquiry in these times, but there's this deeper sense of, God, there's really something wrong, you know, I need to solve this other thing before I can get on with these other things, you know, even though, and like, doing it a thousand times just makes me kind of restless or kind of like, oh my God, this isn't working, because these things seem to keep coming up that seem to have such importance, even though logically they just don't, you know? And that's where I kind of am with it.
Yeah, well, what I can tell you is that this is a consequence of the vichara itself, and it's a consequence of the vichara occurring within a mind that is accustomed to thinking of in terms of direct cause and effect. In other words, I am doing the vichara in order that all this stupidity, all these stupid things that I do, will be brought to an end. And that's a natural thing to think, and that's a natural motivation for doing anything, is in order to bring these things to an end. But that's not the purpose of the vichara. The purpose of the vichara is to snuff out the idea that these things, these storylines, is their momentum, their persistence, their whatever, that to snuff out the idea, the underlying conviction that these affect you and harm you. And because I tell you the truth, the reason that the things that are done in opposition to these kinds of storylines, the reason why the things that are done in opposition to them are harmful to self and others is precisely because of the underlying conviction that there's nothing to me but these storylines. So the point of the vichara is, although the consequence in the end most likely will be the vanishing of many of these storylines, that's not the purpose of the vichara. That's kind of a side effect. The purpose of the vichara is to snuff out the idea that these storylines are your identity. That's the purpose of the vichara. And in the end, it is perfectly, it is almost certain that many of these storylines that are the following of which are harmful to self and others will vanish over time, because their need will vanish. The need being this underlying intensity of the certainty that this is me. So what I suggest to you that you do is to continue the vichara, and to, if there is anything that you know to do during this period, during this time of, and I suspect this is all an evolutionary consequence, an evolutionary outgrowth. You know, these things don't go easily sometimes. And so that what I would ask you to do is, above all else, continue the inquiry. Whenever you can, taste, touch this sense of self, because you know it's here. But don't pay too much attention to the storyline that says that what I'm doing this for is to rid myself of these storylines. And if there's anything that you can do, if there's any techniques or practical ways in which you can prevent yourself from being from harmful behavior and harmful action, then do that. You know, I mean, really, do that. And if not, then there's nothing that's going to prevent you from that anyway. But continue the vichara. Just continue that. And whether you are able to mitigate or ameliorate some of the nastiness that, as you say, has its own momentum, whether you are able to or not, the vichara in the end will do all that work for you. And in the end, all will be seen as it really is, and all will be well. But in the meantime, do what you can. Try not to be harmful to anything, if that's possible. It can't hurt to try. But continue the vichara. Do you hear that?
I do. I guess it just feels like a going against of kind of instinct to kind of, you know, stand up for yourself in small situations, or, you know, instead of causing silly little arguments about things, to try to leave them go. But that doesn't feel like my nature. It feels like I want to, like, you know, stand up for myself or just, you know, do that type of thing. And it's that kind of conflict between the two that's causing the kind of distress, I think, in the situation, whereby when I didn't hear of this thing before, I would have always went with that. And even if it went causing conflict with others, I would have still kind of said, oh, well, I'm just standing up for myself kind of thing. But now it feels like there's the other option of seeing, you know, who is it that suffers in this situation? Who is the me? And that kind of, it feels like sometimes that's repressing the other one. Anyway, I'm just going around in circles. Thanks, John, for talking it out with me, and I guess I'll do what I can. Thanks.
I do want to say one thing, because as you spoke, you revealed a little bit more about what's going on. I do want to say one thing, and that is that the other purpose of the vichara, the other thing about the purpose of the vichara is that it's not mind reform. In other words, it's not something that we do in order that we won't stand up and be assertive about ourselves or even aggressive about ourselves. You know, that's not the point. And it is understandable that this you must see that this storyline, that I have to stop standing up and asserting myself at whatever cost, this storyline is just a storyline that is in opposition to the other storyline. This is just a little war going on. And in the end, well, you'll see. I'm very happy to speak with you, Derek, and please stay in touch and let me know how things are going. Continue the vichara, and just continue the vichara. Okay?
Okay, thanks, Dan.
Okay, that's it. We are fresh out of time. And what a wonderful time I have had here today. I'm very happy with this meeting. I say this all the time, but I can't tell you how magnificent it seems to me that we can meet like this, and how what a gift it is that we are born in this time, when the capacity for us to meet together at the same time, without regard to where we are physically, and reflect upon and consider this possibility that I tell you will bring an end to the misery of your life. This possibility that is so radical and so unlike any other spiritual teaching or spiritual idea that has ever appeared. This possibility that is so simple and so close and so without complication. This possibility of merely bringing my attention to, well, to me, prior to the storylines, prior to all of it. Just not in order to know what I am. You know, it's very, this is a very common misunderstanding, a common place that we fall into. The purpose of the vichara is not to know what I am. You already know what you are. The purpose of the vichara is not to figure out what you are. The purpose of the vichara is not to find an answer to anything. The purpose of the vichara is not to transcend or transform your life or to reform your mind. The purpose of the vichara is only to eradicate within you, to snuff out within you all belief about your identity. And the consequence of the snuffing out of all belief about your identity is the drying up of the river of fearfulness and anxiety that is all there is to the misery of human life. So I am very grateful for your time and attention, and I'm very grateful for your willingness to work with me on this, to converse with me, to help me communicate this wonder. Please take care of yourselves. Be well. And I will and keep in touch with me. I will be here whenever it is that I am here. I know you know that on some Wednesdays I have an hour. I spend an hour here in a kind of an open house, and you're welcome to stop by then. Please write to me. Please come to the next online meeting. And who knows, maybe someday we'll come upon each other in the the other virtual world here. Carla has something she wants to say to you, and I'll leave you now. Thank you so much. Bye.